Okay, welcome to the Social Policy Forum on Healthcare and Design. As you know, there's an election coming up sometime this year, and the issue of, and you've probably seen the posters, David Cameron's one, I'll cut the deficit and not be the NHS, and particularly the question of cutting the deficit is obviously going to be a big issue, and the parties are obviously skirting around that. I think what's significant about this discussion, it's been going on for some time, is that you can start to see how that might be done at one level, drive towards responsible, towards promoting responsible behaviour on one hand, and promote and really cutting back the state on the other through cutting back bureaucracy, the personalisation agenda, and very much to talk about putting healthcare in the hands of ordinary people. So what we're here to discuss is whether we think that it's on balance a good thing, or is something we should see as problematic. But obviously, there are some fairly nasty undertones if you're talking about really healthcare being being something that people are responsible for themselves. So are people going to be denied healthcare, for example, if they don't toe the line? And what do we think of nudging in this context, in terms of design being used to promote health, but it does not seem to be coercive, but there's a behaviour change aspect to it. To discuss the issues, we've got Martin Perks, if I'm not stealing his thunder, and he's a design consultant who's been looking at these issues for some time. Okay, Martin.
Thank you, Martin. I wanted to stop you there because you are nearly giving the game away. A bit about me. I'm a design consultant, so I work with organisations, large and small, to help them reshape their products and services through business research and so on and so forth. But one of the reasons why I'm very interested in this debate about healthcare and and behaviour is because for many moons I've been a designer, and also intervening in various design debates, looking at how far design can and can't go in ultimately changing people's behaviour, ultimately changing the way that people live. And around the whole health discussion, I think it really sort of comes to the fore. So I'm very pleased to do this tonight, because in April I've been invited to Norway to chair a very similar debate around design and health. Again, how far can designers go toward changing people's behaviour for the betterment, or even perhaps against what they really should deserve or need. So I think I'll talk for maybe 20 minutes or so, and then we'll discuss it. So I'm really only going to introduce the subject as far as I see it. I think most of you will probably have many opinions about what I'm going to say, as well as be able to give a more deeper analysis on some of the themes I'm touching upon. But here's a quick introduction to health and behaviour. So I think no one can really be amiss the fact that health is top of the political agenda. The NHS seems to be in systemic crisis. Today on the news, Mid Staffordshire NHS Trust has apparently left patients in sobbing and humiliated, because all the services are just in complete collapse. Nurses have no duty of care, infrastructure's broken down, everything else. But also likewise, our personal health is also apparently of grave concern. So there's not a day goes by where you are swamped with advertising, posters promoting or lecturing people about obesity, smoking, fitness and all the rest of it. It seems to be a more common event. But likewise, I think we also have to realise the fact, which is one of the paradoxes about this whole debate about health, is that we are ultimately getting fitter. We are ultimately living longer, which is partly due to our own sort of lifestyles, perhaps, also better food, but also, of course, due to better medical clinical care. and provision and drugs and innovation and so on and so forth. So things aren't really as bleak as they are, as they may actually apparently appear. We are living longer, better lives. But even so, the whole point about sort of institutional breakdown in the NHS and the whole kind of crisis around our personal healthcare, I think are also both connected, as Martin sort of has already highlighted, the whole kind of cost-cutting culture as a result of recession, along with lifestyle, the need for lifestyle changes, seems to bring those kind of two moments together. Because through sort of cost-cutting and lifestyle changes, the argument is that we can help to save or rebalance the NHS, because it's out of control. So with that in mind, kind of behaviour politics, which I'll come on to explain a bit more, seems to be very heart of the health service provision from now and also in the future. Just very quickly, last year, to give you a shape of how things are changing, Lord Darzi, who was commissioned to really look at, you know, top to bottom how to reform the NHS, made it basically the conclusion that we need to put patient experience at the heart of how the NHS is now run and managed, and that should drive reform. As well as Andy Burnham, NHS Secretary last year, also said that, you know, it's not about provision anymore, it's actually about other things. It's about how you're spoken to, how you're dealt with, how you're treated. For him, they can all be as important as your medical care itself. Very striking statement to me. So it's not really about clinical innovation, seems to be where the real debate is. It's about all these other soft factors, as well as about how to get you to live differently. So all this, again, I think has been really given some focus because of the kind of cost-cutting climate that's going on, recession and the Tories and Labour squabbling about how much they can cut. So, you know, in reality, NHS managers themselves are also looking to cut the cost burden, because apparently nothing else to them seems to be a good enough strategy. So cost-cutting is the way forward. But behind all this, I think, is another significant change, which is, and also gives this whole debate about behaviour real imperative, is that the key is all about prevention. So healthcare is always now treated as a preventative type discussion. And that's why I think the whole discussion, consequently, about behaviour and health matters more so now. So one example, I hope I can stick to my 20 minutes, Ruth Carnell, who's the chief executive of the NHS in London, recently announced the Go London campaign, part of the For Change for Life health promotion that's going on now. She launched a competition basically to get ideas from the public about how to drive up physical participation in London, in the London population. This is from an NHS director now talking about preventative remedies to get people more active outside of the hospital, right? Quite significant. So again, the recession has really given us a new lease of life, but I think we need to really think this through quite carefully, because I think that what we're seeing here is probably the most interventionist sort of period in our lives when it comes to healthcare, and it's going to get worse, because the coming election is now making more of a battleground between Labour and the Tories, and I want to focus a bit on what the Tories are doing, because they seem to be pushing the debate even further than Labour have done so far. So Andrew Lansley is a shadow health secretary. He's written the Healthier Nation report that makes their real sort of focus quite clear. So one of his big ideas is to remake the Department for Health into the Department for Public Health. Subtle, but quite key. So what that means is that prevention is all going to be in vogue. Even that he wants to promote the role of the chief medical officer is having more remit, more public profile. So it's all about pushing that preventative agenda, as in their core sort of health policy. So, for example, if you read what he's saying, they're going to have a massive focus on, for example, teenage health, obesity, sexual health, all the rest of it, and all the other things that go along with being bad teenagers these days as well, like delinquency and all the rest of it. But it's all about trying to get them to live different lives now, because we don't want them to be a burden on the NHS and the state later, right? And that's the kind of, the recessionary sort of framework that comes back into play. But it's, of course, all around behaviour. It's all about trying to get these teenagers, the public and everyone else, to change their lifestyle, their behaviour, to make them live different in a different way. But of course, stepping back, and this is where some other people here might be more expert to explain this, Labour has has for many years been, of course, focused around policy, around the individual, getting us to change our behaviour. And they also, of course, have for many years deemed the individual namely the youth, for example, as being problematic, as being a problem. So they raise the bar. I also think in terms of state intervention in our lives, no one can really deny the fact that Labour has sort of caused more regulation in our lives than anyone else before, through smoking, obesity, antisocial behaviour, all focus on the individual as the problem. For example, the respect agenda created by Tony Blair in 2004 or 5, I think, you know, was really about trying to focus on those unruly kids, got no respect for nothing. It's all about, you know, we need to kind of curtail their sort of unruliness and their unallegiance to anything good in society by ASBOs and the rest of it. So it's always been about kind of focusing on individual behaviour. Of course, on that again a little bit more, what that meant, I think, was significant in the sense of political ideas, was that it represented a retreat in social or economic or cultural explanations or more material explanations about why these people are finding themselves in the mess they do. More so, the discussion then focused on, rather, these kids have a lack of meaning in their lives, a lack of purpose, a lack of well-being. You know, the whole sort of debate around that has sort of taken more centre stage. So I know that, I think you've read this thing, the Young Foundation report, I've got it here somewhere, sort of made that point clear about needs being really implicit in terms of the way people are and how they see themselves, because they said that, you know, being isolated for them can be just as bad as being poor. Right? That's quite a staggering thing to say. It's not really your material circumstance which is the issue, it's what's going on in your mind that's the problem. And so therefore, what that meant was that it allows the state, in that means, to kind of work out better ways to intervene in these individuals' relationships to make them feel better about themselves and so on. So look, but back to health, because I want to come back to health. I think, although we've got a real focus on the individual through what Labour has done so far, the Tory agenda, which I think Labour and others are following, want to push it one step further, because they want to focus more on, I think, our innate irrationality, on our emotionalism and our incapability of making good, rational choices. So instead of, for them, direct intervention, it's for them, the Tories will now be about an agenda which is based around influencing us through our actions and through the actions of others. So I'm going to briefly mention the book that Martin just gave away. I don't know if anyone's read the book called Nudge. It's about behavioural economics, psychology, and about how to influence others' behaviour through connecting with people through the actions of others. So, for example, by creating social norms that make you feel bad about yourself because everyone else is doing something different to you, and that becomes a target means to kind of get you to do something better. So lots of kind of examples of this in action, apparently, where in the health debate, where you know, fat people apparently have fat friends. If you've got fat friends, you're going to be fat yourself, right? That's the way it works, because you behave like everyone else in your social group, and it's through more your emotional sort of decision making rather than your rationality that means you behave the way you do. And my other favourite example is one of the ways apparently to get people to eat less is to give them smaller size plates, right? That's how apparently we can solve one of the sort of approaches to obesity. Now, if that was the case, then, you know, things would be a lot easier in my mind, but I don't think people are so emotionally driven. I think we have a lot more rational basis to why we do what we do. So look, getting back to what I'm talking about with regard to health and behaviour, I think that what the Tories are getting at is that they want to help us more so make the right choices, because often we seem to be incapable of making the right choices for ourselves. So their level of intervention has gone one step further than what Labour are doing right now, I think, because they want to establish these kind of more broader social norms, shall we say, because that's how they deem people will want to behave when they see everyone else doing something more responsibly, perhaps. I also think perhaps that the argument is that they are not necessarily keen on direct regulation, perhaps as New Labour has achieved so far through changing laws and legislation and more administration, because primarily because they can't afford it. There's no more coffers in the budget to do that heavy-handed approach. And I think because of that context, they've had to find or come across new ways to, again, influence people's behaviour in a slightly more sort of off-handed manner. So so one of the things that Andrew Lansley's suggesting in his paper, and will probably bring about if they come through and win the election, is that they want to change behaviour, but also by making us more responsible for our actions, right? And what this means is they want to draw up responsibility deals with, for example, businesses, in local communities, with education authorities, councils, all the gamut of local establishments and institutions that already exist. They want to bring it all together around this idea of making us change the way we live. So you can imagine that everyone is now sort of, you know, focused around sort of teenage problems, health problems. So it will not only be local businesses who are now going to be incentivized to make them change their behavior, but the same program runs through schools, hospitals, community centers, the whole shebang. So you can imagine that kind of intervention is going to be quite heavy-handed, but in a less direct regulatory sort of sense, but more through this kind of social awareness that they're keen on doing. So, for example, we're already seeing it now, even with New Labour's advertising. They want to, in fact, the Tories have said this, they want to curtail, for example, the advertising of sexy clothes to young children, for example, because it's immoral and the rest of it. So they're already trying to sort of make advertisers adhere to standards where they can't start to become irresponsible in what they're sort of making these kids and so on do. But also, likewise, Tories also thinking about introducing drinking targets, daily food intake guidelines, restaurants displaying dietary information, which are already trying in Scotland, by the way, anyway. So again, us as individuals are going to be sort of bombarded with this sort of implicit do good or way to live more healthily information throughout all aspects of our lives. And again, anyone who doesn't follow those rules perhaps would be seen as more of a social pariah because you're not following the behaviour of everyone else, which apparently is the best way to live. So, and I think getting back to the NHS, this preventative sort of climate certainly leaves a lot, lets a lot of them off the hook, the NHS managers, who themselves are in a bit of a managerial crisis because they set too many targets, the system's failing, you know, patients are not satisfied and the rest of it. So, you know, the NHS Confederation Chair Brian Stoughton said recently of the Tory plans that, you know, behaviour change means tackling the cost of the system, encouraging people to make lifestyle choices. Now, what he means by cost of the system is really how people choose to live their lives. We are, in effect, a cost of the system in terms of the way that NHS bureaucracy lives. Again, quite a striking sort of finger point at you and me, rather than them being incompetent managers. So I think getting back to where things would run to, I think what we're going to see is a combination of trying to change our physical environment to make us behave differently, as well as encouraging us to be more responsible toward one another and to ourselves, but ultimately to also toward the system. Because the way it works is that we mustn't be a drain on resources, on valuable resources, because if you're fat, well, then surely we should think about denying you access to the NHS because we don't have so much money to go around to afford to fix your innate sort of problem. So, what you know, part of their paper, they introduced some research from this company called Foresight Report, and they had this term, obesogenic environment. So fat people, it's because of their innate biology and their innate sort of reaction to their environment means that's why they're fat. Right? Again, not really rational. It's more about your emotional propensity to behave because of the situation you find yourself in. So, of course, Lansley in the Tory policy has said, well, you know, whilst we must acknowledge the environment as a factor, we also need to make people begin to take responsibility for their own actions, their lifestyle and health. So, again, it comes back on you in a more of a preventative sense. So look, so how do we sort of, or rather how am I going to conclude some of this stuff? I think universal provision is one thing that is now very rarely talked about in terms of health care. I don't hear anyone talking about we need more innovation in the NHS, better drugs and so on. I myself am a diabetic. All I'm giving is more therapy and more ways to eat properly rather than being encouraged by better access to medical and clinical research innovation, which is going to give me hopefully a new pancreas and the rest of it, whatever else I need, so I can eat cakes forevermore. Not as it is right now, because I'm being told all the time, you're a diabetic, you must be responsible. So I think, you know, that's clearly going on right now. And I think, and no one therefore is talking about better services per se. As a designer, I think design can help there, but only to so far. So I think what we need to think about is that, more generally, as I said briefly before, is that also if we think about health as a potential time bomb that apparently it is, I think there are many if you look at many of the issues around obesity, smoking, and so on, lots of those kind of real sort of scares and fear mongering is probably actually unfounded. That, you know, people might have high cholesterol, but it doesn't mean they're going to always have heart attacks as a direct kind of correlation. Now, I'm not going to go into all that right now, but we can certainly talk about that as a debate point. But I think even Andrew Lansley recognised it in his report, because he said, actually, year on year or month on month, people are actually ageing longer. But his problem was there is a larger gap between the poor and wealthy in terms of their lifespan. And that, you know, that's a fair point to make. But his intervention, I don't think, is anywhere near to actually resolving that problem, because he's really finger-pointing, I think, every one of us. So I think, what does all this mean? I think, on one level, behaviour, the whole behaviour agenda, does provide the state with a real sense of purpose. So much like New Labour has, you know, in a weird kind of way, a sense of purpose about trying to rebuild our well-being, our community spirit, and our, you know, bringing those unruly youth back into line. Similarly, in health, they got again something to say when, of course, Gordon Brown is accused of bullying and being tearful. It gives them something a bit more positive to talk about, perhaps. But of course, on the other hand, if we are, as individuals, reduced to these emotional blobs where all we do is respond to these kind of stimuli in a very sort of unconnected and rational way, then of course there is more potential for more intervention, maybe not now, but in the future. And that is a very big danger. And I think, whilst regulation might not be on the cards right now, I think everything, in a sense, is being redesigned before our very eyes, which might not be as insidious as a new law, but certainly communities are being redesigned before our very eyes, architecturally and all kinds of manners, in terms of like placing the way that houses are placed together and so on. In the health context, we're going to get menus, we're going to get salt, air miles on food, all the rest of it, right? So all that discussion, all that sort of redesigning of our world is taking place, whether we like it or not. And the problem is, to end on, is that it's very difficult to do different once all that stuff has actually happened before our very eyes. And so the question is how do we sort of intervene in what seems to be very much a sort of a steamrolled sort of advance about health and behaviour? There you go.